The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, September 19th, 2008, and this is episode number 146. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today to talk a lot about Indy and the Red Bull Indianapolis MotoGP that we just attended along with Jules and everything. So we got a really, really big show today. And there's all kinds of stuff to talk about. First thing I got to mention here real quick, September 19th, it's International Talk Like a Pirate Day. So if you happen to download this show on your way to work for your morning commute or what have you, make sure that you talk like a pirate and annoy all of your coworkers with plenty of "arr, mateys" and "arr, avast" and all of that kind of thing. And I'm going to leave it at that. But if you happen to get this show after September 19th, mark it on your calendar for next year. September 19th, International Talk Like Pirate Day. Let's see. Moving on to stuff that's a lot more serious about MotoGP and everything. We have an enormous show today, as is to be expected, because Jules and I and Jim Race from Ride On 2, we were all out there along with whole bunches of other people at Indianapolis, and we got a lot of content. Jules and I did a call that, of course, was going to be a short call, but we ended up chattering away for about an hour and 20 minutes, and we're going to play that first. And then after that, I've got about 45 minutes worth of excellent stuff that we picked up there on scene. So we've got interviews with riders, interviews with Toby Moody. We talked to him a couple times. Liam Schubert, of course. Just all sorts of stuff that we recorded while we were out there. So first of all, this first part of the show, like I said, be me and Jules kind of wrapping up the race and everything and you know, the normal sort of thing that we do after a race. And then the second half of the show there will be stuff where you'll sort of have to strap yourself into the Wayback Machine and kind of pretend that you hadn't necessarily been there or that you haven't already watched this race, because it's sort of as it happens. And I just played it in order so that anything that we're talking on Friday afternoon, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen on Saturday, that sort of a thing, et cetera, et cetera. All right, before we get to all that, got a couple of big shout-out thank yous to Ted Ardia, Greg O'Loughlin, hope I'm pronouncing that right for you, Greg, and Corey Solovey, all of whom were very, very kind enough to donate to the MotoGPOD cause in one way or another, which helps pay for the bandwidth bills and the hosting and the Skype and the beer and all of that kind of stuff, the bills and expenses that we tend to rack up. And let's see, consulting my notes here. Other than that, I do want to mention a little bit of a mea culpa. In the last episode, I, in a total sort of off the cuff, didn't even think about saying it, sort of slammed Chicago by saying something along the lines of, I'm not sure why you would want to go to Chicago as a tourist. And I was called out by listener Brian from Chicago, and he said, hey, you know, Chicago is listening. It's the third largest market in the United States, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, you're right, Brian. That was uncalled for. It was unfair. I should not have said such a thing. I haven't even been to Chicago except for your airport, and that was uncool of me. So, you know, Chicago, home of Chicago Blues, deep dish pizza, all sorts of stuff like that, the Second City Television. So I, you know, my bad. I shouldn't have said it. It was just kind of a dumb thing. I don't know why I said it. Partially, I think maybe because, and I will stand behind this one, and I'm not going to apologize for this, your guys' weather out there sucks. It's not just the experience of Indy that I had, but so far in my various travels, I haven't found a place east of the Rockies where I didn't think the weather was just not that great. It's, you know, hot and humid in the summertime and snow in the wintertime, or hurricanes and tornadoes or what have you. So I'm going to stand behind that one. But other than that, I do apologize. Sorry about that, Brian. Sorry about that, Ted, because Ted Ardia works at Chicagoland Speedway. That's kind of a cool thing. So let's see. That's about it. Why don't we stop wasting a lot of time and get right on to this call that I did with Jules? All right. We got Jules on the phone. Welcome back, Jules, from the weather wilderness of Indiana.
Mm, yeah, you too, Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, it was different. It was extremely wet.
Oh, I think it wasn't just the wetness. It was just the variety of weather we saw in Indianapolis. Yes.
Well, Saturday was beautiful, and then the wind was crazy, and yeah, I mean we all know what happened with the weather, but I mean if you weren't there, actually at the track, it's hard to imagine. I mean you saw a lot of it on TV, but it still was amazing.
There's a great photo that kind of illustrates the issues with the wind that just got posted on Round 2 today, of all of these Ducatis on the ground in the parking lot. Ouch.
Major ouch. I haven't seen that one. I'll have to check it out on Right On 2. I was looking through your thread of all the photos that you posted up there. You got some really good ones. Some of those shots, especially the rain shots with all the reflections and all, were truly spectacular.
Yeah, I'm very happy actually with the way they came out. For those who don't know, I usually bring a big lens and try to sneak into various places that you're not necessarily able to get into without media passes to take pictures. And security at Indy was very tight, so that was just not possible. So I was kind of worried about it. Bob was my assistant pretty much the whole weekend, especially on the rainy days when we needed to have a camera.
I believe you were calling me your umbrella. Bitch most of the time.
Yeah, I'm the umbrella bitch. That's right. Yes.
But in any case, no, I was happy to help. And it gave me,
But I was amazed at how well the photos came out because we were shooting through fences and between little cracks in the walls. And it was the first time I was using a new camera out in the field, and it was great. It was, and everything, all the equipment actually survived. I was very, very happy.
Despite all the wet. Big plus. We'll have to, I'll definitely post a link on MotoGPOD.com to those photos and everything, and you'll get them up on your Monkey site as well, I assume, or are you just sticking with the Ride On 2?
Oh, no, there's going to be a gallery. It's taking a long time. I have some 2,000 photos still to go through. I already blew away I've gone through about 3,000, and there's 2,000 more to go.
You took that many pictures? Wow.
Yeah. I did.
Well, when you told me that you'd filled up an 8-gig card and you were working, and all this, I was like,
six
wow,
times.
That's a lot of pics.
I filled up 2 8-gig cards 3 times.
Wow.
So, plus a whole bunch of 2 gig cards. Anyway, enough about that. It was pretty insane.
Yeah, it was a good time. Anyway, and actually, now I want to mention this before you, while it's on the top of my mind, that you said that the security was fairly tight at Indy. And one of the things that I had said about this whole event was that I wanted to sort of see how Indianapolis Motor Speedway puts on an event. And I'll tell you, it's very, very different from Laguna Seca. It's both... I guess you might say it's good and bad, different in some ways. The facility is in a lot of ways is beautiful. All the grass and everything is like golf course quality, manicured grass all over the place. They quickly adapted to problems like where some high traffic areas and you start getting some mud going on and everything. And there'd be guys coming out there with wood chips and spreading it around with rakes and all of that real quick. Traffic. Both inside the circuit and the actual car vehicle traffic, coming and going was very well managed, and there weren't a lot of issues of crowding and jam ups and things like that, and that all went really, really well. They do know how to put on an event.
Parking was absolutely no problem at all.
Right.
We were cabbing it most of the time, but people who had to drive to the track had no trouble getting in and out of the track. The place is surrounded by streets that lead off, and there's access to the interstate very quickly. In that sense, is definitely way, way better than Laguna Seca, which is nestled in the in the hills of Monterey.
Yes, and they, actually, yeah. When you mentioned that it's sort of right in the middle of things, there's the streets that border the actual Indy Motor Speedway are like neighborhood streets. And right across the street, you've got, not exactly the highest rent neighborhoods in the world, but houses and apartments and trailer parks and things like that. And, just right there, that was a little bizarre.
Yeah.
But the downside to that smoothness and all of that was that there was almost a sort of a police state atmosphere of, you know, traffic direction. And, well, like, you know, we got chased out from, you know, like a distance of about, I think it was about 3 or 4 feet from where, you know, you were shooting through a fence, through a gap in a fence. And there were no signs saying that you weren't supposed to be right next to the fence. And some guy comes along yelling that if you don't have a press pass, you have to go back behind this railing that was, like I said, you know, about 4 feet away.
Yeah.
And, stuff like that.
Yeah, and of course, you know, they did, because paddock passes were not being sold to the general public. Those who had paddock passes, we were lucky enough to get paddock passes. Those of us who got passes were like, "Oh, this is great because you know it's not crowded." But I have to say, and a lot of people have said this. I really like this, the way they do the paddock passes, because when you actually get into the paddock area, there's so much. It's not crowded. It's not insane. You actually get to see more. But I think that's, you know, it's very selfish, because very few people, a very tiny percentage, got access to the paddock, and the rest of the people really didn't get to. You know, that's, to me, that's very much part of the racing weekend, is the seeing the crews at work and seeing the riders up close. And you know, in that respect, I think Laguna has Indy beat, and actually I think Laguna has everybody beat, because it's pretty much the only track on the MotoGP calendar where you can get, where you can buy paddock passes to the area where the riders and the crews actually do a lot of their work.
Yeah, I agree on that one. They it was nice to be able to get around in the paddock, and I mean, even in Laguna, the difference between the paddock and the sort of general admission areas is night and day, as far as, you know, it's a lot less crowded. But it was still, it's much more crowded at Laguna than it was at Indy. And yeah, the thing that bugs me is not only that it's so limited. Okay, that's fine. You know, Laguna could stand to make the paddock pass a little more exclusive. Some, you know, basically drive the price up. You know, you got to be a serious fan to get a paddock pass. But the problem that I have with the typical way that they do it is that often it's almost like you unless you're one of the anointed few, you're not allowed in. You know, it's not available at any price, sort of a thing. You know, you have to have a hookup. And I don't think it was quite so much that way at Indy, because a lot of people that had some of the better suites and things like that, they got paddock passes included with their suites. But, you know, if the only way that you can get into the paddock is because you happen to, you know, have some connection or something to Bridgestone, or you're a movie star or something like that, you know, I hate to use the word fair, but I don't think that's fair.
Right. Well, anyway, there were people, a lot of people did get access in there, and I don't know, they got their money's worth.
Yes, they did. Yeah, and it was kind of fun to, we met quite a few fans of the podcast and fans of Ride On 2 and fans of Liam, much more than I've ever met in Laguna before, where, you know, just people sort of stop me and you two, you know, hey, you know, yeah, that's us, MotoGPOD. So that was a little weird, but we know we talked to a few people in the paddock. I'm thinking of Greg O'Loughlin particularly, that managed to really get a lot of use out of his paddock pass.
Yeah, well, he was also there on Thursday, so yeah. On Thursday, they had a walkthrough for everybody that could, who had a paddock pass, could go in and walk down the hot pits, check out the crews and the bikes and stuff like that. I think he did a little more of that. But anyway,
yeah. And you and I both said this. Why didn't we come for Thursday?
Yeah,
you know. And
next year, ooh, whatever.
Right. Next time, I'm doing it. That's all there is to it. And take that extra day and go. So anyway, like you say, anyway. Let's talk about the race, because there was one of those as well. Actually, there were several.
Well, I did want to kind of sum up the whole weather situation, because, you know, for those who viewed the race on TV, they only saw the wet, crazy wet Sunday thing. Friday we had downpour, complete downpour, pretty much the whole day.
It was all day, a steady, steady. Very, you know, it started off right off at 9 o'clock in the morning, and just kind of continued all day long. Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't get horrible at any point, but it was definitely raining the whole time. And then on Saturday, it was clear and actually kind of like hot and humid, but clear, and it was a great weather for racing. And then on Sunday we had, it was one of the most insane days. It was like we had everything: wet, complete downpours. I guess you'll play that little segment when we were hiding underneath the little roof of the medical building there, from the real downpour, while they were trying to figure out how they're going to clear all the water off and whether they're going to be able to run the race. And then, you know, the high winds and knocking over fences in the paddock. One of the fences got knocked over, where behind which all the boxes for storing all the bikes and parts were being kept. It got completely knocked over. Like I said, the bikes, those in the parking lot got knocked over. You know, we had sun, we had rain, we had everything that day. It was unbelievable.
Right. It was. It was the, some of the wind was incredible. Yamaha tent got knocked down, you know, where they have the tent with the, you know, where they're showing you the current street models that you can go by and everything, and that tent basically collapsed.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's going to be a sale on some of those bikes.
Yeah, scratch and dent.
Well, one of the things that we really, we're both looking forward to, I know in Indy, was to see the 125 and 250s. We did get to see the 125 race, which was shortened to two-thirds distance, and obviously the MotoGP race, and then the 250 race, which was supposed to take place before the MotoGP race, was moved to after the MotoGP race because of the, basically it was just impossible to, the track had standing water on it, and then it got canceled, so that was a real bummer. I really, really wanted to see the Simoncelli, Barbera, you know, Bautista, Pacini battle continue in person. So that was kind of a bummer.
I agree. That was probably the single biggest sort of down note of the weekend, that didn't happen. And I mean, I didn't even get a chance. It seemed like every time the 250s were on track, I was going from one place to another or something like that. So for one reason or another, I didn't get a lot of time watching the 250s, and then once the race was canceled, it was a little bit of a disappointment. Understandably,
I watched the qualifying, and their warm up, and it was just really whetting my appetite for more, because even their qualifying session was like really intense racing. They were in these little packs, and they were racing, these guys. You know?
Yeah. They definitely tend to stay in a group much more for their qualifying sessions. It seemed like, not so much spread out like MotoGP tends to get very quickly in qualifying.
Right.
But they, the amount of water that was on the track when the 250 race was scheduled to start, and we watched the safety car going around, and we were at turn 9, which is right at the entrance to the back straight there. Out of a little complex of turns, and the safety car is just going through and throwing up rooster tails. I mean, not just rooster tails, but whole full on splash where, you know, the car is almost hidden by the amount of water that the front wheels are throwing up. And I mean, it wasn't just a little bit of water on the track. This is like a puddle, a big puddle, and you know, you can't ride motorcycles in those conditions, so.
You can barely drive that car in those conditions, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
it was really something, because when the rain finally let off, they brought out these huge, you know, jet engine type blow dryers. I've never seen anything like it. They were able to clear that water out in about 30 minutes, I think, once it stopped raining.
Yeah, they made amazing. A big difference fast. I mean, that thing was clearing some water off that track. And if it hadn't been for water continuing to flow across the track, because it just simply was not draining away from the grass, and they might have some drainage issues there at Indy as far as the track is concerned. But, yeah, so it's sort of leaking from the grass areas and just kind of flowing across the track in portions. You know, otherwise, that they would have had a dry line very, very quickly forming in the everywhere throughout the race. I mean, it has to be some kind of like a Hilo jet engine or something on a trailer with a sort of a pipe sticking out the side, and this truck just driving this trailer around blowing this water away.
Pretty amazing.
It was amazing. So
you want to talk about the race?
Let's talk a little bit about the race. Actually, it was a pretty good race. I mean, it might not be like Laguna 2008 quality, where this is the race you show your friend.
It's going to be hard to match that one.
It will. And like I said, that's, you know, you've got the friend that doesn't particularly watch motorcycle racing or doesn't know what's going on or whatever. Show them that one because they don't need to know any names or what's going on with the season or anything like that. If you don't like that race, then you must be, I don't know, crazy, you know, numb. This one was not quite that great, but it was still quite exciting. Some leaders, Stoner started off leading.
Well, so qualifying was interesting because Valentino Rossi managed to break Stoner's run on poles.
Yes, exactly.
Stoner had seven in a row and then was going for his eighth, and Valentino Rossi ended up pipping him just barely for the pole.
Do you think that's because, which was at the last minute too, the qualifying session was a little weird, and a lot of stuff happened in the very, very last section of the qualifying. But do you think that Rossi's pipping of Stoner for the pole, which was by, let's see, 84 thousandths of a second, was that partially due to Stoner's injury? The scaphoid in his wrist.
Yeah, a lot of people were saying, you know, it's a left-handed track. It's a left-handed. It's his left hand that's injured. Means, you know, you're doing a lot of counter steering to the left. He himself has said that it's not causing a problem when he's out on track, especially for short sessions. That is more of a problem probably with during a race, which we don't know since he's been crashing until this one. I don't know. I think that it's a track that nobody's been to before. Anything could have happened. I mean, it's not like Rossi has been really far back on qualifying the last few rounds. It was bound to happen that he was going to be a little bit faster for one of those times than Stoner. I don't know. I mean, Stoner still beat a lot of people. He beat, you know, 18 other riders. I mean, 17 other riders besides Rossi's.
And by bigger gaps. I mean, you know, Stoner and Rossi, like I said, 84 one-thousandths of a second, you know, first and second there on the grid. Jorge Lorenzo in third was three-tenths back from Stoner.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, which, you know, is still a close gap, but, you know, compared to 84 one-thousandths is a huge gap.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I think that's fair that Rossi has... I still do believe this, that Rossi has stepped up the game, that he has, whether or not it's something so callous as, oh, well, you know, I can go ahead and start six because I know that I can pass everybody and get to the front, or, you know, whatever it is that Rossi's doing, he's definitely qualifying and starting better than we've seen.
Definitely. Well, it's the only way he can bring the fight to Casey. He knows it. Pretty much everyone has written off that the championship is going to go to Rossi at this point. Even before this race, it was pretty obvious that it would take a lot of, you know, favorable coincidences for Stoner or Pedrosa to catch Rossi. But you know,
at this point now with the gap that he's got going on, yes, it's pretty much a done deal.
Well, certainly after this race.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's still not mathematically locked up, but and you know, barring some horrific accident or something like that for Rossi, which of course we don't want, but you know, yeah, it's his to lose basically. He's 87 points ahead with four races left. So
right.
But yeah, so qualifying, Rossi, Stoner, Lorenzo on the front row, good front row. Hayden, Spies, and Dupuy on the second row. So and this is, you know, Randy Dupuy qualifying. I think did a pretty good job.
He's been qualifying well, for the last six or seven rounds actually.
Yeah. No, he the guy can ride. It's just sometimes has a problem staying on the motorcycle. Mm-hmm. but yeah, and it he did quite well. It was a little funny which one of the practice sessions where we watch and De Puna actually just had a little off and a small off track excursion, went across the grass.
Yeah, Saturday morning. Yeah.
And, I kind of said something along like, it's only a matter of time. But he didn't crash.
It was actually, so nobody crashed in the race, which is incredible considering the conditions. Now, we did have, a shortened race. So there were 7 laps that during which somebody could have crashed. But this is only the 2nd race in this season where nobody crashed, I believe.
Or maybe it's the second first. Race? Or was it the first?
I don't know. Maybe it was the first.
Off the top of my head. But yeah, it's good to see. I mean, nobody wants to see somebody crash.
I was talking to a couple of photographers. This Peter, one of the guys from who's a listener to the show and is on 2 forums, was saying, "Damn, I wish I could have seen somebody crash in front of me so I could take pictures of it." I was like, "Yeah, I don't know."
Yeah. Which, anyway, yeah, I guess from a photographer standpoint, yeah, you do get some kind of good pictures of crashing, but still, it's kind of a bummer. But all right, let's see. Rain, how are we doing there at the beginning of the race?
It was raining pretty strong in the beginning, but there wasn't that much wind.
Started raining again?
It started raining.
It was raining.
It wasn't like pour. It was just this good, sprinkling rain. Obviously, it was a declared wet race, and they were on full wets. They came around on the warm up lap. The puddles were pretty much taken care of, so it looked good. And then from where we were standing, obviously I've also seen the race since then, but from where we were standing. We couldn't see any jumbotrons in the beginning, but there was good commentary. At least we could hear what was going on. So like we knew, for example, that Stoner took the whole shot, and that Nikki had a good start. And when they came around the first time, it was already Dovizioso in the front though at that point.
Right, Stoner wasn't in front for very long.
Yeah,
and, he got a good start, but yeah, it just for whatever reason it didn't stick.
Like the first corner we could see from where we were standing was 6, and by the time that they went to 6, Andrea was first. I think Nikki was already in 2nd at that point.
He might have been in 3rd. I think Stoner. He was still in 3rd. I don't think he got to 2nd for till the end. Well, actually, I've got the lap chart here somewhere.
Yeah, I think it was at the end of the lap where he got to the.
Yeah.
He passed.
But yeah, actually, where we were watching the race, other than there was originally a jumbotron there at turn 9, but it had been taken down because of the rain, along with half of the signage around the track.
Oh, we should totally talk about that. Exactly, that's right. Because this is actually something that you wouldn't have seen or heard about probably on the broadcast.
Right, exactly. When we were for the over. For the 250 race, we went to the turn 9 grandstands. We managed to get some additional seats. Oddly enough, we never sat in the seats that we bought. and we'll get to that later. But so we were at the turn 9 grandstands, which is a pretty good spot because you can see a decent amount. And Jules wanted to get some photos and all of that. And the 250 race. So the 250 race gets canceled and it's raining and we're sort of hanging out. And one of the security guys kind of came up and started chatting and said we could go over by the medical building. So we went over there. When we came back for the start of the MotoGP race, it's quite windy, and we're talking to the security guy again, and we're watching these crews take down the signs, which were...
It was actually the red... So first, they had to take the Red Bull banners off the solid backboards.
Right, and the solid backboard said CD, which... Right. So I thought it was interesting that they'd covered up CD ads with Red Bull ads, but... Well, whatever. Yeah, they took all the banners down. But the problem was, is all this stuff is plywood and it's built on a wooden frame and this and that. And these CD signs it was blowing so hard that they were pulling out and all of the little sort of constructed supports and brackets and whatnot that are just basically, you know, wood with nails and screw gun, you know, screws in them and stuff. This is all popping out, and it was going on to, it wasn't really on the track at that point. It was in the runoff area, but it could have gone out on the track easy enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a bunch of nails.
Yeah. And, so they were busily taking the whole thing down. They took down half the height of the city signs. First, they removed all the Red Bull, which were like plastic tarps, basically, with Red Bull lettering logos on them. And that was actually the real danger, was that those things were stapled with these giant staples, and because the wind was blowing at the tarp, it was actually launching the staples across the onto the track. They took those down. It was still not enough because the city backboard was also having the same kind of problem. It was launching pieces of, you know, wood and screws and stuff like that. It was amazing. So they
it was and actually also amazing was the efficiency and speed of these crews, because I mean, this is after the formation lap. The riders are gritting
up. That's right. They're gritting up.
Yeah, these guys are doing this stuff.
Yeah. So while you guys were watching the grid tour, with a couple of interviews probably thrown in, these guys were still cleaning up bits of, you know, last thing you want in a motorcycle tire is a screw, and here they are, you know, like screws, nails, and staples.
Can't be good. Can't be good.
So yeah, huge kudos to the IMS guys. They really, really, really like kept the event safe and sound, and they were immediately on top of things. It wasn't like the Nürburgring race, you know, back in 2002 in World Superbikes, I think. It was 2002? When there was a little bit of oil and it took like six laps before somebody finally raised a oil flag.
Yeah. Or I mean, even in not to knock Laguna, but the things like where I was talking about, like when a mud pit would develop, and, you know, these guys would be out there right away with wood chips and stuff, you know, and at Laguna, this is something where they sort of, they might get it fixed by next year, you know.
Right.
It's like it's not going to happen that weekend.
Yeah.
So it was very, very efficient. These people know how to put on a show. So I do agree. Big, big kudos to the whole indie track workers and all of that stuff. But yeah, official race leader, back to that race again, that darn race that keeps interfering with our chit-chat, was on lap one was Dovizioso.
It was the first time he's ever led, and he was very happy. Later he said he was very happy to lead.
He was looking good.
Yeah.
But managed to get pipped by Hayden there on lap two. So Hayden led from the second lap on, and Hayden actually was in the lead for quite a long time. Let's see.
Basically until lap 13.
13, yes, on the official lap chart. And I'm trying to recall if he was... Once Rossi passed him, he was done. It wasn't like there was a sort of interchange back and forth.
I think there was some that wouldn't have gotten recorded on these charts. I think Rossi caught up to him on lap eight, and almost and I think they swap, and then Nicky got him back.
Did he?
Nicky had incredible drive out of the last corner onto the straight, and also in turn nine.
Mm-hmm.
That was something there, because I was trying to get a nice close shot of them together, because they would be coming through eight very close together, and then his drive out of nine was very good. I think the Honda has a little bit more balls at the lower end than the Yamaha, and he was able to gap a little bit enough to actually prevent Rossi actually had a much higher top speed, he was able to prevent him from just passing him down the straights with pure power. So there was a couple places, I think, that on lap eight that they swapped positions once or twice, and but then Hayden got the best of Rossi. But then I think around that lap also is when Rossi had a bit of a moment. We didn't see it, but on the broadcast, I think it was in the last section, and Hayden gapped him a little bit, and Rossi had to work his way back. and then finally got him in lap 13.
Yeah, and then there were a few moments. We saw a really quite a big moment from Hayden, and
that's
talking
right,
about
in the corner eight. Yeah,
right, right. And Rossi making the pass stick when Rossi was getting around Dovizioso. He put a pass in on him, quite an aggressive pass. Was it turn four? And basically came in late on the brakes, passed on the inside, but then had to go wide, and Dovizioso just went right under him again and held him off again for a couple of more turns before the inevitable happened. And that was exciting to watch. So if you haven't seen the broadcast, you got to watch it, MotoGP.com or wherever, and watch that, because that was some good stuff.
Oh yeah,
yeah. But eventually, though, it did turn out to be, you know, like Hayden was leading, and then Rossi managed to take the lead officially on lap 14, and at that point it was done. He started gapping Hayden.
Hayden pretty much actually held out. He held out he was only about a tenth of a second slower per lap, but he was a tenth of a second slower per lap.
Right.
And it was only in the last two laps where he really dropped off. And here's an interesting – so this is very interesting because in the middle of the race, we actually had a bit of a dry spell. Like the rain pretty much stopped. The wind was pretty much gone. And that's when the fast laps were getting set. Unfortunately, that's not so good when you have rain tires, because what happened is that Hayden actually took a bit of a gamble on this race. He took a softer tire, hoping for the rain to keep up. So he took a bit of a gamble. He took a softer tire than even the Michelin guys were saying to ride. And that meant that during the drier part of the race, he actually ate up a lot of the little, the tread that actually pumps the water out of the way when it does rain.
I think the official term is nubbies.
Nubbies? When the rain came back, he actually had not that much tread left to pump that water away. So the moment the rain came back, he really dropped back. And that was just in those last two laps. But even before that, the wind had started to pick up as well. Because you could see a dramatic drop in lap times for everybody between lap 16 and lap 17. And that is where the wind really started. And then the gap between Rossi and Nicky was still, about a second, I think. But then on lap 19, it got huge. And Lorenzo, who was silently riding in third and pretty much on his own since halfway through the race, almost caught Nicky. We actually ended up walking from, I think we left lap, around lap 12 or 13, we left turn 9, and we went back to the paddock, because there's the paddock. One of the nice things is the paddock has its own grandstands, which are on the straight and pretty high up, so you can see the finish. We were like hoping we'd get to see the finish of the race from up there. We apparently got there just in time, because we got there with two laps left, and we on the last lap that we saw, Lorenzo actually passed Nicky just after the finish line. So going into the next lap, on the TV broadcast, it turned out that Nicky did fight back and get that spot back. But I'm positive that had the race run full distance, that Lorenzo would have passed Hayden.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was
no
a
doubt.
Couple more laps, and it would have been a done deal. I think Hayden did say that, you know, he was pretty much riding on a slick and at that point because of the tire wear, and it was, and it never got to the point where I would go out on a limb and say that a dry line was forming throughout the entire track or anything. But there, it was definitely drying conditions, and then it just. The floodgates and wind, mostly the wind.
It was the wind that was amazing. I mean, we were standing up there, and it was hard to stand up there.
Mm-hmm.
We were pretty much exposed at the very top of the grandstands. And I had to hold on pretty hard to the big lens, because it was getting blown around. It was very hard to get a shot off. I saw, you know, people's umbrellas flying off. And there's another thing that was happening was on the track was like garbage.
Right.
you know, cans and whatever.
Just
what
all you, sorts of stuff, you know, hot dog wrappers, whatever. Yeah, all yeah. kinds of crap flying around. And so, folks, when you go to a MotoGP race, don't just let your stuff fly around. Throw it in the trash can. But yeah, yeah. Who was it? We heard. I believe Liam told us that somebody had almost gotten nailed by a, you know, like a pop bottle.
Right.
That was flying around, and it was. I mean, there was the wind was strong. It really, really was strong. And well, they were saying 60-mile-an-hour gusts.
Right.
On the weather warning.
I definitely felt 60-miles-an-hour gusts up there. It was brutal.
Yeah, yeah. It was. And I mean, and you remember, know, it tends
remember,
to get funneled.
Remember I said, like when we were still at turn 9, maybe about halfway through the race, I was saying, you know what? They started this race knowing full well they're going to call it at two-thirds distance because the weather was just really unpredictable and dangerous looking. And I mean, the skies looked menacing the whole day. And, you know, as soon as they had to hit 20 laps, which is what they needed.
For a two-thirds distance, right. Because the weather started getting rough and the tiny ship was tossed and all of that, yeah. And it was, it really was. I think they actually did that with the 125 race earlier on, too, that
yes.
they made yep. sure that it lasted. You know, it's like, let's hang on just a couple more laps, kind of a thing. And,
right. So in 125 is a red flag. This was actually a very interesting point of confusion because in 125s and 250s haven't changed the rules for since, you know, a long time ago. They if the race gets stopped for reasons of weather, they restart and do a sprint and then do aggregate times and all that kind of stuff. They don't have a white flag, flag-to-flag race like MotoGP where you go in and switch bikes. So the fact that the MotoGP race got red flag, because it got red flagged after 20 laps, and Rossi was declared the winner because he was way ahead at that point, Hayden got second because he was ahead of Lorenzo on the lap previous to the last. So that was our podium. And way, 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 way back behind them was Stoner, Dovizioso. Dovizioso and then Spies in six. Good job for Spies there, sort of, although I do have some comments about that. And then we had Sylvain Guintoli, who had a great ride. And beat Danny Pedrosa. I think he passed him somewhere just before the end. I know that the Alicia crew were extremely happy. Like lap 17 is when he officially was ahead of Pedrosa. And then Christopher Mullen, who actually I expected to do better considering it was a rainy day. Alex De Angelis, Ant West had started 19th and was actually in 10th at one point, but then got beaten by De Angelis at the end. But he was pulling some good laps. He was putting some of the fastest laps aside from the top three guys for the middle part of the race. Tony Elias, then Randy DePunier, John Hopkins, and Colin Edwards was the last guy in the points. And that was kind of a shame. Colin seemed to have a really bad start and never really recovered. He was fighting for last place with Melandri for a while and then managed to pass Caparossi and Toseland, who had a miserable finish to the race.
Right, especially after a fairly decent start for Toseland. He was up around...
he was up there in sixth place, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was quite up there, and we're watching him, and then it was in the pretty much the span of a lap, and... I haven't completely gone through and rewatched the race and everything. I started watching the speed commentary race and I had to turn it off. And I need to watch the official MotoGP one.
You mean NBC?
NBC, yeah, which with all the speed guys, and I'll get to that in a minute too, or we'll talk about that some other time in the podcast or what have you. But yeah, I was surprised, and I'd like to find out what happened with Toseland. Why? You know, because he was, I'm looking here. Let's see. He was in eighth, actually. And he was in eighth for about five laps. And then he starts dropping. And by the By the 10th lap, he was down in 14th, and it just kind of, you know, got worse from there.
Yeah, he was even last for a little bit, and then Melandri relieved him of that honor.
Yeah, and Melandri had a bit of a mishmash of a race, because at one point he was almost, you know,
he was
17th.
Yeah, he did pass a couple guys. Anyway, lap time wise, what I found amazing was just the difference. Like Rossi and Hayden were doing like 150s, a low 150s, and Rossi, I think he even hit a 149. Yeah, he had a 149.6 at one point. You know, and then you look back. You know, Lorenzo was the only one who was anywhere near them in terms of lap times. He was pulling 151s. Stoner was doing like 154s. Ben Spies, 153, I think, was one of his at that point. And the rest of these guys maybe had like one good lap, and the rest of it was like 153s and up. And, you know, Melange was doing like two.
Stoner was clearly holding up Spies and
Dovizioso.
And Dovizioso for a point. I'm trying to. Yeah, yeah, definitely around, you know, the lap 13 through 16 session, you saw that, you know, these guys were just trying to get around him, and there was a bit of a interplay back and forth of, you know, not quite being able to make the pass stick and all of that, but definitely was holding up traffic.
Yeah, something was up there. Anyway, so then they called the race, and it was really anticlimactic for us in the stands, because they didn't say anything. They just, all of a sudden, the riders started coming into the pits, and they went to the garages. They didn't go to the Parc Fermé right away. Apparently, it was a bit of confusion. So, because of this flag to flag rule in MotoGP, everybody just assumed that actually the teams didn't assume this, because the team knows the rules much better than we do. But we just assumed that was it. But down in the garages, apparently they were preparing the other bikes, because there was a lot of confusion. People were running in saying, no, the race is not over. They're going to have a 5-lap, you know, sprint, and then they're going to do aggregate time. Now, that's something that we haven't seen in MotoGP in a long time, because they have this flag-to-flag rule. But if you look at the rule book, read this very carefully, they, in the case of safety, when a race is stopped for safety reasons, example, like a crash, where they can red flag a race due to a crash, then the old rules still apply. In other words, even though the race was declared wet and you can go in and change bikes and all that kind of stuff, you could still red flag that kind of a race for other reasons than wet. For example, in this case, it was because of the wind. And had the wind, you know, died down, maybe they would have run another. If the forecast said that, you know, in a few minutes the wind's going to die down, then I think that they would have restarted the race. Now, it's a good thing they didn't, because it was just getting worse and worse.
It did, yeah.
But the teams basically were getting their other bikes ready, and then finally they sent a guy around to tell them all, no, it's actually over. And I was talking to Andrew Wheeler, who was he's a photographer, a really awesome photographer. We've had him on the show before. And he was in Rossi's garage, and, you know, they really weren't sure. They were kind of like starting to celebrate, but they weren't really sure what was going on. They were definitely waiting for that final word, and he was there when they arrived with the word that it was over, and that they could actually, you know, relax and start celebrating.
Right.
So that was interesting.
And Liam had the somewhat the same thing to say as well, that, you know, there was some confusion going on. And the thing is, the annoying thing about the weather was, yes, you're right, it picked up, it got really bad for, probably the better part of an hour. Mm-hmm. And, you know, long enough for them to totally cancel the 250 race, they're not even going to try. And then it kind of died down and got sort of okay.
It was basically the nicest part of the day
late afternoon.
About 45 minutes after they canceled the 250 race.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a bit of a shame, you know, that like you said, we wanted to see the 250s race. We actually had a chance real quick to talk to Marco Simoncelli on Sunday evening, which we played that We're going to play that here in the show a little bit. And, yeah, it's just the way it was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But,
So I think that's, Nick, it was great to see Nikki on the podium. It was great to see Lorenzo. This was the first time everybody was very happy on the podium. Obviously, Valentino Rossi was happy because he won. Nikki Hayden was happy because he got a good podium, and he was fighting for the win for quite a, you know, pretty much most of the race, 18 laps. And then Lorenzo, who apparently never has had in his entire career, even in the Spanish championships when he was running around back then, he never had a wet podium before. So that was he was very happy to be there.
Right, right. And yeah, there's some talking about Nikki. You know, he said that this is, you know, a kind of a nice high point after somewhat of the lowest point of his career the past, you know, month really, or a couple of months almost.
Yeah.
With his whole contract debacle and the injury that he got in his X Games session and all of that business. So,
yeah, that's, you know, which is actually was still definitely affecting him because he was on it. He was walking around with a cane the whole every time we saw him. He had the cane with him, you know.
Or right. See him riding around a scooter carrying a cane. Yeah. And that was one thing that we noticed in the first free practice session. It looked like it was affecting him a lot. I think he was just being very, very careful.
Yeah.
But he was so tentative going through. We were at, for the first free practice, we were at turn two, right? Yeah, turn two.
Yeah, and, two, three, four.
It, you know, you watch him going through the turn two and then turn three complex, which is ridiculously tight. And he was just so much slower than everybody else. And
yeah, this was in the wet you're talking about?
Yeah, it was wet, session? And it it's a new track and all of this.
No, but definitely, I mean, some of these guys were dragging knees, and you know they had rooster tails coming off the back of the tire and their knee pad,
right.
Their puck. And both him and Pedrosa actually both looked very tentative. Pedrosa
very
obviously
tentative.
Had new tires and new bike and at a new track,
right. And I mean, this is what practice is for, is to go out and, you know, the who gets fastest time in free practice one, that doesn't mean squat. You know, you don't get points, you don't get extra money.
AMA.
Right. So, also though, how Caparossi and Hayden were almost like in lockstep for most of free practice one.
Which,
if I recall, Caparossi was following Hayden, right? Yeah. For the longest time. And then finally, towards the end of the session, Caparossi passed Hayden and went off. But I thought that was kind of interesting, too. They were basically circulating the track together.
Yeah, yeah. I think for me, the best thing about the weekend was, aside from actually seeing the racing, was this was even better than seeing the racing. Because the racing we can see on TV was just the atmosphere, the amount of fans that were out there, considering the weather. I don't know what the attendance figures were like. Do you know? Do you have those yet?
No, I never saw that yet.
Somebody said 91,000 on race day, which is a lot less than the 150 they were hoping for. But, you know, considering the conditions and the fact that really, I mean, I think only about a third of the stands were actually had covered, had roof
if
over
that,
the top.
If that, know? Most of the stands are, yeah, you're out there. You're braving the elements, yeah.
So that was great to see that, you know, that kind of thing. And just meeting everybody out there. And we had a little meetup that worked out great on Saturday. Got to meet a lot of cool people.
It did, especially since, you know, it was a fairly last-minute thing for us. You know, I mean, we didn't give a lot of notice on that. I'm not a big planner. But we did the combined sort of MotoGP OD and Ride On 2 sort of meet-and-greet thing on Saturday there. And it was great. We got a chance to talk to quite a few people and had a nice time there. You know, we were out there for during lunchtime and I don't know how many people were out there. It had to be, it was more than 20.
Probably about 30 people rolled through at one point or another, and we kept running into more and more as the day went on, and certainly on Sunday the most. The same people and others that would, you know, see Bob was wearing his MotoGP OD shirt, which helped identify him.
yes. Like I said, this was more than any of the Laguna races I've gone to. I had a lot more people come up and kind of say, you know, hey, are you Bob from, you know, MotoGPOD and all that. And it's, yeah, I got to admit, it's a little bit of an ego boost and, you know, that people are recognizing us and saying hi. And it was great to talk to all of you out there. So that if you're hearing it and for those of you that missed it, cause I got a few emails like way, way after the fact of like, where are you guys at? You know, stuff like this. And it's like, hey, I'm still pretty old fashioned. I only check my email on my computer. I don't bother with the phone and all of that. And, you know, sorry, it didn't work out. Next time, I promise I'll do better. I'll find some, you know, we will have a true meet and greet.
It's amazing that we even made it to Indy considering how late we left some of our planning.
Yes, indeed. And that whole, getting to the meet and greet there, which was, you know, so right before lunchtime, the 250s are out there and we're watching that. And that was the session where Luthi had his bad crash, which sucked. Yeah. And so I was making my way around the outside of the whole Indy complex, you know, starting from, well, like that Red Bull Bridge thing or whatever. It took forever. I was walking around for like 45 minutes.
Yeah, I made the same mistake. I walked around the outside of the raceway and you know, I was like at Stand J, which is where our seats were that we never actually used. From there to get to the meet and greet, it took about, you know, good 40 minutes.
I did go up to when I was doing that big walk around, I went up to sort of scope out, you know, where the seats were, the official Stand J seats that I thought I'd be watching the race from. And the view was spectacular. I mean, it was been, you know, good. Your view of the Jumbotron was, you probably need binoculars. It was small, but, you could see a lot of turns from there. And for future reference for people that are going to go to Indy next year, the stands that are right next to Stand J, which they call the Northwest Vista, at least this year, that was covered under a general admission ticket, I believe. So you could just buy a general admission ticket and go sit in those Northwest Vista seats, which are really, really good as well. You see
a pretty fair track, probably.
Yeah, I mean, you see a pretty fair chunk of the front straight, you know, like the beginning of the front straight, mm-hmm. and you see the whole last set of turns, you know,
you see straight from turn 9 and then everything else beyond that, right?
10, right, 11, right. 12, that back 13, straight. 14. Yeah, I mean, it's a good view. It's like being on the hill at Laguna Seca, right. You know, where you can see everything. And I mean, granted, yes, stuff is a long way away. Bring your binoculars. But it still was, you know, you can tell what's going on. And if you're a big fan and you can pick out the motorcycles based on the liveries and all of that sort of thing, it'd be a great place to watch the race from. Unless, of course, there's, you know, hurricane force winds and a lot of rain and all of that, because there's, you know, it's an exposed grandstand.
Yeah. So I'm sure those guys are getting hit pretty bad.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I want to mention this too. I saw this on the official, you know, Red Bull Indianapolis GP.com website, that if you buy a ticket for next year for Indy, if you go ahead and purchase if you bought a ticket this year and you renew that ticket for next year, as long as you do that before September 29th, so you got about almost 2 weeks, they give you a free DVD of like a highlight DVD, which is kind of cool.
Oh,
so,
nice.
A little incentive to go ahead and buy your tickets again. So if you know you're going to go, go ahead and, you know, buy the tickets soon and you'll do good.
That kind of stuff actually really adds to the weekend. One of the things that really blew me away was the on Sunday morning, you could buy a T-shirt which had the grid from the qualifying the previous day printed on the back.
I thought that was really cool too. Apparently they do that at Indy all the time and, you know, for every event. But I still, I was fairly impressed with that too, that they had these shirts you know, it's kind of cool. And I got one, Jules got one, on that. And not to throw you under the bus, Jules, or anything, cause I'll think, what about next year? What do you think of going to Indy and Laguna Seca next year?
I'm definitely going to be at Laguna Seca. I haven't missed Laguna Seca in, like, you know, pretty much since I've lived in California. So, I'm going to be very tentative about it because it is it's a big race that I think I don't know. We'll see. It is. I mean, if I'm flying away for a race, I might end up going to Europe. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, Exactly. This is
the amount of traveling I did to do this, especially because I missed my plane on the way back, which we won't get into too much, but I had quite an interesting journey back. So the amount of traveling that I did to get to Indy, I could be going to, you know,
Mugello
I'd rather be going to, I think, Mugello or someplace like that.
I mean, yeah,
I'm not knocking it. Just to see yet another one. It's like Laguna is a given because I could drive there in 2 hours.
That's a no brainer. Even for me, I can drive there in 8.5 hours. It's still a no brainer to go to Laguna. I will go to Laguna for sure. But yeah, I agree. On Indy, it's like, you know, for a few dollars more, I can go to a round in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, so I'm not putting it completely out of the realm of possibility to go to India again, and I'm glad that I went this year. It answered a lot of questions for me. It was fun. I had a great time, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm a little, like you say, a bit tentative on that whole thing, and it's up in the air as far as whether or not I'll go back next year.
Right. Again, it's not knocking the track or anything like that, but.
No, not at all.
And also, you know, we may all be, you know, with the economy the way it is, maybe fighting with rocks and spears by next year. So who knows?
Yeah, never know. Exactly. but yeah, it was a good weekend. And so, you know, thanks to everybody. Thanks to all the fans of MotoGPOD that we talked to. Thanks to Gordon from Pole Position Travel. Thanks to Toby Moody. Thank you to everybody. Thanks to Indy for putting on a good show. I think you guys did a damn good job.
Yeah.
And
Very impressive.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really, really good stuff. And I just wish that the weather had been a little bit better. On the other hand, after watching and hearing some of the news of other people's trials and travails with Hurricane Ike, you know, I had you and I and everybody that went to Indy, we had a race weekend that was somewhat dampened by this, but, you know, it didn't destroy our house. So,
yeah. That's true. And, you know, I'd say we hit two rounds this year that were historical. I mean,
sure,
we had an unbelievable race at Laguna that we got to see, and Indy obviously was the first time that motorcycle racing has been there in 99 years, and on top of that, almost unprecedented weather effect on the race. I mean, the only thing I could really compare it to is Sepang qualifying. Couple of years ago when they had to actually cancel qualifying and used free practice times for the grid.
Right.
That was the only thing I could compare it to in terms of like weather-related craziness.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. I mean, we've had a lot of rain before, but the wind, I think, is even more of a factor than the rain at this race. And it was just insane.
I did want to mention that I thought that Valentino Rossi's post-race interview was really funny. He said, you know, it was getting really bad out there for the last two or three laps, but he just didn't want to be the guy to raise his hand because he was leading the race. And so he was so happy when he saw the red flag go out because he was ready to raise his hand and say, come on, guys, we're out here. And it's getting really crazy. I know that him and Stoner and I forget who else are the leaders of the safety commission, but they were talking a little bit afterwards. And they were saying that it was absolutely the right decision to do. Nobody had any issues with it. I think everybody was agreeing because the race had to be stopped.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's I in a lot of ways we got pretty lucky on the weather. The 125 riders had a dry race start. You know, they were out there on intermediates and wets and stuff, but for all intents and purposes, it was about as dry as it got all day.
Yep. They got a drizzle throughout the race, pretty much. That's it.
Right. Exactly. You know, and then the gap that we had in the weather that allowed the MotoGP race to run was kind of fortunate too. So. It could have been a lot more. Well, it could have been more disappointing, you know. Kudos to the Red Bull rookies that you know went out there, and I mean they got to do. You think about it, The Red Bull rookies had the first motorcycle race in 99 years, the actual race.
That's right.
Because the American kids all went out on Saturday, and then we had the combined American – well, I shouldn't say American kids, excuse me. The U.S. Red Bull rookies cup tour, which is combined of – is largely American and South American, you know, variety of kids from the Western Hemisphere. They did on their Saturday thing. And then Sunday they had the combined the Red Bull Rookies Cup and the U.S. – and I know I'm getting these names wrong, but the two groups of 13-year-old kids went out there and did their race on Sunday. And they had the rain had just got started and just enough to get the track sort of moistened up, you know, and make it a, you know, treacherous situation. And they went there, ran a good race, and, you know, that was good to watch as well.
Yeah, it was a very exciting race. And did you have a, I was going to say that, did you want to go through some news before we wrap up? Because there was a lot of news after. There's a ton of news.
Yeah. So, yeah, why don't you, if you've got some notes, go ahead and cover those real quick and then call it a night.
Yep. Okay. So, silly season kind of got less silly because we finally got, well, the biggest news, I think, was that, you know, they finally officially were able to say that Nicky Hayden signed with Ducati. So he will be with Ducati. He'll be on the main team with Stoner as a teammate, as far as I can tell from all the press releases. There was some talk about him asking to ride on Michelin's, and there was some talk about a second team, which would be Michelin's. And yeah, there was some also. Yeah, what it was that the final quibbles on the contract were that he wanted to have the option of switching tires, right?
Right, just in case, you know, it turns out that he can't adapt the Bridgestones or who knows what exactly, something along those lines.
And so as a result, there was a little bit of a rumor during the weekend that he may go to that there may be because there are going to be two Ducati teams, which are basically factory run. The Alicia team is going to get sucked into the Ducati
umbrella
factory team too, basically, and that there was some rumor that might be a Michelin team. Ducati actually hasn't been on Michelin since 2003, their inaugural season, so that'd be kind of interesting. But I don't know. I think now it sounds like it's going to be Casey Stoner and Nicky Hayden on the main factory team, and there's this other team we don't really know yet
who's
going to be on that team. We do know that Gresini has signed both De Angelis. They announced it last week, and they at the race they announced that Tony Elias has signed with them. So Tony Elias is going back to Gresini, where he did very well. He had his win back in 2006. What else do we get for sure? We have confirmation that Melandri is on going to the Kawasaki squad. And it was an interesting story about that. A while back, he apparently did a secret test with Kawasaki and did very well. And the interesting rumor that came out of there was that the reason why Ducati decided to keep him for the rest of the season was not some kind of a gift or anything like that. Obviously, there was issues with his contract because he was originally contracted to go be at Ducati through 2009. Both parties agreed that was not a good idea. He was struggling. He was hating life. There was talk about him being replaced by Sete Gibber now, you know, halfway through the season. But essentially what this rumor says is that Ducati was worried that Melandri would do better on the Kawasaki than he would do on the Desmos Adici, and that that would reflect poorly on the factory. So they asked him or forced him or whatever they could do to stay to the end of the season. It's kind of an interesting story. I'm not sure how much of that is true, but
I actually think that one sounds like very, very plausible. Although the flip side of that is, hey, look, you know, you're going to see Marco next year probably doing better than he's been doing on the duck. You know what I mean? He'll go out there and
yeah. But then you can say, well, you know, they've had
developed it exactly.
They developed and all, Kawasaki, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know, and things have changed. But if it happens in mid season and he does better, that's
right.
And, you know, chances are that he would have done better simply on the fact that he was so disillusioned with the Dismasadici, and his confidence was so lacking that just getting on a different bike would have given him enough confidence to do better.
There's been, you know, some shakeups a little bit in the whole Ducati camp lately, and I mean, and Marco did at Brno and Misano. He's had, you know, his pretty much more or less his best results all season. And I think it was somewhat of it was a mental thing of a weight off his shoulders, if you will.
Yes. Yeah. Very true.
Yeah. But the weight
apparently was back on his shoulders in Indy.
Yeah, it was. It was. Other news.
I think the most important news is the fact that Stoner might not finish the season.
Yes, I was going to bring that one up if you didn't bring it up. His injury is really troubling him. His left wrist is messed up.
Yeah, well, my thing is on this is like if he was any closer in the championship, absolutely he would keep riding because it's not affecting his riding that much. He still can do scorching laps. I mean, obviously, we don't know how long he can keep it up because this was the first time he's finished the race since Laguna, and he did drop off towards the end a little bit. So maybe it was causing him some issues, but I certainly think that if he was in a realistic shot of the championship, that he wouldn't even be considering something like this. But you know, it kind of makes sense. It's like Pedrosa. Both Pedrosa and him at this point have given up any chance of being able to catch Valentino Rossi, and rightly so. And they're going to they're working on their next season. You know,
right? Career maintenance mode is. Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah. Pedrosa is in effect getting a lot of seriously valuable testing time with the Bridgestones on the Honda. You know, so he's got the last five rounds of the season that he's going to be able to, in effect, use as a real world test.
Yeah,
and that's awesome for him. You know, to be able to, as such a head start, and that with Stoner, in effect, what I read was that it's pretty much a done deal. You know, because of he's going to have surgery. He's hoping to delay this surgery, but it really looks like he'll miss at least some of the preseason testing for the 2009 test season. And there's a possibility that he may not finish out this season, but he's, you know, oh, I really want to finish out this season, but I'll might have to miss the preseason test, blah, blah, blah. Which was on MotoGP.com.
Right.
That's what I read that one.
But there's possibly that he'll just say, look, the preseason is actually going to be at this point more important than the ending season here.
This could turn into a situation where it's like, if you don't get this fixed now, you're going to be, you know, screwed up for a very, very long time.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't want that. Definitely not.
These are the kind of decisions you have to make when you're at this level of, you know, what's more important. And, you know, I wouldn't blame him for a minute. I hope he finishes out the season. I want to see, I mean, he's the only guy that's taking it to Rossi right now at all.
Well, Hayden just did.
Well, except for Hayden, yeah, in the rain. But
I think we'll see us. I think we'll see Lorenzo up there again before the end of the season, and even maybe Pedrosa.
Even Pedrosa, and actually possibly even Hayden, because I think so much of this is mental.
Yeah.
You know, Hayden's had he's felt the underdog thing going on with Honda. You know, justifiably so. He's had his contract issues, whatever reason they were at for, lining up the Ducati ride, et cetera, this and that and the other, blah, blah, blah. All that's behind him now. You know, hey, he might as well go out there and kick ass the last four races, you know?
And didn't he actually say something like, they might not even notice that I'm gone?
I didn't read that one. Did he say that?
My wife told me in some interview, he said, I don't know if they're going to even care. I don't even know if they're going to even notice that I'm gone.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
So that's, I think, the beginning of him kind of being able to talk about just how he was treated at Honda, which we all kind of felt from the outside.
Yeah, and, on the other hand, it also comes across a little bit as a sort of a, you know, oh, poor me. But
yeah,
a lot of times, and a lot of Hayden is a...
Hayden really took a lot. Come on.
He did. I agree. And he says things off the cuff in a jokey sort of way that may or may not always come across. It's going to be interesting, actually, having him and Stoner as on the same bike teammates.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be awesome. They have very similar backgrounds. As everybody's always been saying when they started hinting at this move, you know,
the whole dirt track thing and all
at the end of the last year. Yeah.
Yeah. Being, like I said, never hidden the fact that I think quite a Hayden fan and all of that. I'm almost a little afraid of Hayden, getting to the Ducati and that maybe, you know, Stoner pretty much spanking him. I mean, I don't want to see that.
Yes. So yeah. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I hope
it's a little too early. Before we wrap up, I wanted to mention the most important news for you, by far, is that Randy DePugnay is not going away. He's staying with LCR.
Is he? Good. Yes. I'm so glad. Yes. So, I guess LCR is crash testing the Hondas then for another year.
Yeah. Well, somebody has to do that.
Yeah, somebody has to do it. Make sure that the bike is strong enough to be able to withstand being thrown around through the gravel, and it will allow us yet another season of. Randy DePugnay chest picks. Thank you.
Did you get your photo, by the way?
I did. Okay, I was so happy, Jules. Thanks very much. Appreciate that.
I think it was Jim that sent that to you.
Yeah, whatever. But
I totally forgot to say we wanted to kind of what did you think of Spies? Spies really had to...
We should talk about that guy, Spies, we have to
count him as the only rider at the track who had... I mean, he had 100 laps or 104 laps, I think, during the tire test back in that was before Laguna, still, right?
Was it? If it was, it was right before. No, yeah,
it was
just
after or something like that. Anyway, they flew out a couple of the riders out there. Obviously, only none of the official riders were allowed to go. Only test riders and wild cards.
Right.
And Spies was a wild card at the Indy, so he got to go around. So he had a tremendous amount of experience. He did finish as the top Suzuki, but was it enough? I expected him to be in the top five, and I expected him to be, you know, like fourth or third. So I think obviously it was rain and stuff like that, but sixth, you normally would say, wow, that's pretty damn good for a guy who's only been on the... In MotoGP race like twice or three times actually. This was his third outing. Yeah. He went in Dunnington and Laguna and obviously here. I don't know. What did you think?
I think, considering that Vermeulen and Caparossi came in 9th and 16th, and so Spies came in 6th, I think he did very, very well with that. Mm-hmm. I think that he did quite well in the practice session. So, I mean, what was he? He was top 5 in
he was one of them, and top 6. Dry, actually.
Yeah, he was doing all right. And, the thing is, if there was a Suzuki seat available, Spies would be the guy. But there's not, and as we heard on the on Eurosport, it was mentioned that rumor has it that he's going to be in AMA next year.
Yeah,
which I find surprising. The thing is no matter what, no matter how good he did, he's very much very 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 quickly running out of places to go. So unless there's a miracle, you know, he's pretty much done.
With MotoGP.
I mean, yeah, right. Not with his career or anything like that, but getting into MotoGP or even World Supers, that, like I said, unless there's a miracle, unless all of a sudden Suzuki says, oh, yeah, we were joking, here's the third motorcycle and Ben Spies is going to be the rider, something like that, you know, where else are you going to go?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think the six was a reasonable finish. He was doing quite well with
it. It would have been a great finish if this was his first time at the track, but he really had an advantage. Yes, I know there's a lot of people will say that, well, you know, everybody, he was probably really fast in the beginning, but everybody learned the track. They don't learn the track that fast.
And the weather, I think, was...
Look at how long it took Rossi to win Laguna Seca. You know, it takes a long time for somebody to pick up the track that well. Now, Dovizioso is a exception to that rule. He seems to just pick stuff up immediately. Laguna Seca, he did fantastic, and at Indy he did really well. So anyway, I thought Spies came in there with a huge advantage, and I just expected a little bit more from, you know, a guy who is so dominating in AMA.
That's reasonable. That maybe he didn't for whatever reason didn't take enough. Didn't take enough advantage of the advantage that he had. He didn't make the best of it, so to speak.
Because it's a good result for Suzuki. It's a good result,
right?
But anyway.
Yeah. No. I think that's fair. That sounds good. And we were discussing this though. One more thing before we shut off. Mm-hmm. The amount of money that Spies, rumor has it, was asking for.
It actually turned out to be a lot more than we thought.
Yeah.
And we were talking about $2 million, and I think he was asking like $4 million.
Right. And, you know, and the thing is a lot of MotoGP riders and their salaries, not that big. Mm-hmm. You know, Valentino Rossi, yes, makes a freaking buttload of money from Yamaha, but most of the other guys are not paid by the team. You know, from the data that we see and the rumors that we hear and all of that, you know, they're making their money in other areas. And for Spies to come in as a relative unknown, you know, not too many people in Europe care about AMA, mm-hmm. and all of that, and say, well, you know, I need $4 million a year, is, you know, for you're MotoGP rookie, dude, you're the new guy. You know, we're not going to give you that kind of money. You know,
yeah. I mean, some of these guys are getting paid like, you know, $100,000 a year,
right? And you know, the disparity is big, and as it is in most sports, where, you know, the Valentino Rossis, yes, they make, you know, 15 or 20 million euros or whatever from the team, plus on top of that, God knows how much from their endorsements, whereas the Silvan Gattolis and whatnot of the field make a lot less, and yeah, so, you know, for Spies to come in and pretty much sort of you know, asking for, you know, top-notch pay as a relatively untried rookie, I think was somewhat of a career mistake on his part.
Yeah. Now, granted, I think the original rumors of him asking for $2 million were at a time where $2 million probably equaled what $4 million equals now. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so...
I think Spies. I think we were pretty much sure that he was going to be in MotoGP at one point. We were saying, oh, it's a done deal. It's just a matter of like getting an official word. Now it's pretty much a done deal. He's not going to be in MotoGP. So, you know, who knows? He may still be in it.
Yeah, exactly. He might miracle a seat somewhere, or like I said, that you know, the third Suzuki will suddenly show up, and it's like, oh, ha, we were kidding.
We know nothing about the second Ducati squad.
That's true.
You know, and there's still that talk about the Team Scott JAR split. So there may be an extra bike on the grid next year.
Right.
We're pretty sure that Dovizioso is going to HRC. Everything seems to be pointing that way. So, yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, Tech 3.
Yeah, they're filled for a while.
Right. The Rizla Suzuki team with the two riders that we know of, and as far as what Suzuki has been saying, the two bikes that they're going to have and all of that, that's done.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, Yamaha. Obviously Fiat, Yamaha.
Yeah, Fiat Yamaha's done. Ducati is done. Repsol Honda, we think, is done because you got Pedrosa and Dovizioso. Mm-hmm. Gresini is done. Yeah.
Yep, DeAngelis and Elias.
Kawasaki is done. And, yeah, I mean, it's just not leaving.
Well, so Kawasaki is done in what way? Because Kawasaki definitely signed Hopper and Melandri, and there's a rumor of the third
bike. Okay, yeah, you're right.
West.
Right,
Was it going to be? I mean, there was the Kawasaki guys did say a lot about, you know, despite the fact that Adam West hasn't had the greatest results, he did actually. They did put a lot of work into him, and he put a lot of work into the bike. I actually got the chance to talk to him. I didn't get it recorded, but I did get a chance to talk to him after the race because he was walking out of the paddock, and he said that that he liked the track, but what really made it difficult was the transition between the F1 section that was laid down for the F1 track and then the section that were made for MotoGP. Apparently, the surface was radically different. So that was an interesting comment, but anyway, so that seat is it's we don't know what's going to happen there, but there's a couple, you know, guys from the 250s coming up, obviously,
right? So. Right, that too as well. So that leaves, let's see, Team Scott,
JR,
yeah, JR Team Scott is if they only have one bike next year, why am I drawing a blank?
Yuki.
Have they signed
Takahashi.
Him? But have they signed him, though?
No, but that's the big rumor.
Okay, because you've got the two team principals saying, yeah, we signed this guy, we signed that guy. Okay, yeah. Right. They're still in the air because nothing is truly official yet. LCR, you got Randy Depugnier, and I mean, you know, that covers it. Bikes,
huh? There's four, possibly five seats.
Yeah, tops. And yeah, that's including
a lot of guys going around.
Right, with the possibility of adding a motorcycle or two. You know, like if JR adds a second bike, or if Kawasaki adds a third bike, or what have you. The music is starting to stop. And those of you that do not have a seat will be going home. And
or to AMA.
Exactly. Or World Superbike, where old MotoGP riders go to die.
Well, not the older guys are leaving, but anyway, yeah.
I know. None of them are leaving. They're sticking around. Including Loris Caparossi, who's, you know.
Speaking of World Superbikes, there's a lot of movement there. We got to talk about that maybe next show. We should talk about World Superbikes. There's some really strange movement going on over there.
Yes. Well, they're going to, what's the name of that track? Dang it.
Vallelunga.
Yes, Vallelunga. That's it. And that's happening this coming weekend. And so maybe we can talk a little bit about that next show, because we've gone on long enough, and it's going to be a monster show again.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, it was great spending the weekend with you, Jules. I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you. You know, for doing what you did to make the weekend more fun.
Oh, it was great. It was really fun. I will have. I don't think I'll have a link for the photos for you to include in the notes this week. You could, if you want, you could just throw the link up for
the Ride On 2
place where there's my photos mixing with some others. I think Peter, who's a listener to the show and also on Ride On 2, posted some really nice images there as well. And Jim has some really good stuff in there too from the paddock. Go check those out, and then by next week I'll have a link for the official Pop Monkey. You know,
5,000 photos.
I'm not gonna have 5,000 photos up there. I'm gonna try to whittle it down so that only the interesting ones are there. But yeah, they'll be up next week for next week's show.
All right, sounds good. It was good talking to you.
Likewise, take care.
All right, you too.
Ciao.
This is Jim Race for MotoGPOD. FP2 is about maybe 10 minutes in, and I've actually retreated inside because it is literally pouring down outside. It's been kind of nice up until this point, but we'll see how it goes. Currently, West is on top by a large margin and looks real good. FP1 was a wet, dry session. You can hear the bikes going by in the background. They have a lovely hospitality section here at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and I've been enjoying it. But try and keep you updated as the weekend goes on, and we'll see how things come out. My understanding is that tomorrow, Saturday, should be a bit of the same as today. Hopefully not so off and on. It'd be nice to get a dry session. And Sunday, the last word is that it's only supposed to rain in the morning, and in theory, a dry race. Good? Well, maybe not, because if nobody's got any dry setup time, that's going to make the race itself a real crapshoot. Anyway, we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, Liam, how's it going?
Oh, no, not this again.
It's a bit wet out here.
Yeah, it's a bit wet. All right, it's 4:10. We just had a log day because we had an extra half-hour session, which meant we had to get to the track a half-hour earlier than normal on Friday. I think the circuit is a little challenging for various reasons, with a lot of reducing radius corners, four different grip levels, and some automotive-style curbing or drainage points that I wouldn't want to fall down on a motorcycle with, much less go down between 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Or 1. Or a lot of this track. But at least with the rain, it's kind of slowed things down. It slowed down maximum speeds, but because when things are wet, you slide a lot further and faster. There's your other negative. So, I don't even know if the AMA would have run on this track, honestly.
On a day like this, Dean?
I'm sorry?
On a day like this, or in general?
Oh, on a day like this.
Yeah.
In the dry, they might make it rain with the tears. I'm just teasing. Yeah, it's great. I mean, I wish the facilities were a little bit bigger. I'm really cramped personally in the back of the garage. I mean, I've got all my stuff for a couple of races, and I've been to other racetracks where our garage facilities were deeper, so a little bit bigger. As far as the circuit itself, it's big.
Isn't this garage bigger than what you get at Laguna Seca?
Yeah, but I have an exterior section at Laguna Seca, so I can fit a lot more material out under the tent. And that's my smoking section. I'm here with Michelle. We're hanging out.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
So you guys had one off, right? Just
one.
Until you had turn one?
Yeah, through turn one. Just lost the front and went sliding, and the bike actually went off the circuit, so I didn't think we'd get the bike back during the session, but we did.
Oh, so he went out on the same bike?
No, we had it ready by the end of the session, but by then he was already working on the second bike, and yeah, it was fine. Really, really mellow, easy get off.
Was that in free practice too?
Yeah.
So how did he get the bike back to the pits, or did he ride it back, or did they bring it?
I don't know. Somehow they delivered it to one end of the paddock, and then we ran it up through pit lane and just put it in our garage.
Wow. But so other bikes I've seen, the track and everything.
I've seen other bikes that have showed up in the truck over outside in the back of the paddock.
So they must be going through one of the tunnels or something like that to cross the track.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen the tunnel. Typically, a big track like this will have a tunnel that goes underneath the main straight to get to the main grandstands. I would assume this track has a couple of tunnels.
Yeah, it does. There's two.
Ah, there are two tunnels?
Yeah, there's two. Yeah.
There's more than two.
Well, there's two on this side.
Yeah.
Okay, one on each end of the straight.
Yeah.
I wish we were doing the Formula One direction of the circuit, because at least the corners open up as you come out of the corner, so you can keep applying the gas. Whereas these, they're reducing radius. You come in slow, and then you got to tighten up and get slower. And I don't know.
Do you think that they reversed that direction for a safety issue, or
there were a couple corners in F1, I think, where they can come out of the corner and be fine if they have a problem because they're in a car, but on a bike they couldn't. You couldn't fix a corner enough to make it have a modicum of safety,
and you'd be in the wall.
Yeah, we'll see something like that this weekend. I mean, I hope not, but we got a lot of young riders out there, and if they tussle in the wrong place, then we'll see some kids have some problems. I'd show you some photos right now, but my camera's not here. You know, they've got drainage channels between 3 and 4, to let water come off the track. And it looks like rumble strip or curbing, but I could literally get my forearm into it. It's dunk and then a solid piece, and then another forearm and a solid piece. So if you went down with your fingers or your toes out, the chances are you're going out of the corner anyway, but it's along the little straight between 3 and 4. Ooh, I didn't really dig it. There's other things. I've got a lot of photos.
Cool.
Michelle's got a lot of photos. We did a little adventure yesterday, and then on Monday after the race, we're flying out on Tuesday, so we've got Monday to relax in the Midwest. I can't think of any other place to relax more than the Midwest. But we have an adventure. Michelle and Liam go to White Castle.
Nice.
So we're going to cross up into Chicago and look for White Castle up there and hopefully have some zany adventures and meet up with Neil Patrick Harris and kick it and then drive back here and catch our flight out.
Sweet.
That'll be fun. We're gonna go to White Castle in Chicago somewhere.
You lived out here for a while. You went to school here, right?
Yeah, about 50 miles south of here in Bloomington, Indiana. Moss, eh? About 50 miles south of here at Indiana University for a few months in 1995. So it was here that I first became exposed to the Waffle House and truckers and the unique way of life that is the Bible Belt. Yes. I lived in a trailer park, actually.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
That's
with
perfect.
A woman that had a metal thing on her leg. And she had two aprons. She rotated one per week. And she would clunk through this trailer home, like clunk, clunk, clunk. It was really bizarre. And then there was an Indian guy living in the back that was some kind of super math physics major that just sat in his room all day and worked on numbers. She was 50-something, still working on her thesis.
Wow, cool. Yeah.
She's been a student for a long time.
She's been working on it for 30 years?
I don't know. She had problems with her professor 3-5 years before, something like that.
You guys are actually seeing me at work.
Yeah. We're watching Liam work right now.
Which is kind of a first for me.
All right.
Okay, you guys go take care. Have fun. St. Elmo's is expensive, guys. I went there with Andrea. Andrea!
What?
Tell them about the steak.
How was the steak?
Steak was great.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, probably one of the best ever.
Yeah.
Maybe
the best in your life.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, the same for me. I think the company also. We went there, we had a hot date on, what, Tuesday night?
Tuesday night.
After Andrea had driven down to Kentucky on his day off, just to hang out in Louisville.
Oh, wow.
What was the name of the town you drove through looking for fried chicken?
I wasn't looking for fried chicken. I was... What a bastard. No, I just did down the south, passed through Louisville. I went to Otter Creek Park and Elizabethtown and other country in there.
This is the first time you're in the Midwest, right?
Yeah, first time.
What do you think?
Well, I see. My trip was a little bit poor, but because it was just one day.
Yeah.
But
you guys
gotta be investigated.
Tuesday?
I mean, I think I would like it. I mean, as farm side, is not bad. I mean, I'm from this kind of area. Well, I'm from the center north near Modena.
Okay.
Yeah, where the Ferrari factory is near there.
Oh yeah.
And it's pretty countryside. So I like this kind of places. Yeah, as soon as you go out, for me, it's great.
But it's flat here.
It's pretty well. If you go south,
yeah.
As soon as you touch Kentucky, start to be pretty.
That's right.
Pretty moved.
Yeah.
It's not flat. It's flat as soon as you got there. But as soon as you arrive in Louisville and you pass it, it's great. The weather wasn't so nice, so I've been lacking for that. But the potential of the zone was there. Yeah. I mean, I gotta be honest. I want to come back just to see even the Midwest because I've never been here.
Yeah.
So I got to investigate it.
Compared to California?
Well, it's another place.
Yeah, it's a totally different world.
Yeah, but I know. Oh well. I know much better California, so I can't judge here.
Yeah, yeah.
But two different style of life, and
for sure.
But for me, it's not bad. Not bad, not bad.
Cool. All right, then. Well, we're going to take off.
Yeah.
It was great to talk to you.
Thank you. All the time. It's a pleasure to be coming to the box.
All right, man. Good luck.
Thank you.
We'll catch up with you tomorrow.
Yeah, sure.
All right. See you.
All right, we got Toby Moody out here. How are you doing today, Toby?
Yeah, I'm all right. So I've managed to stay dry.
Yes.
Doesn't rain in the commentary box, you know.
Yes, this is after Friday, after two free practices, and Toby and Jules and I are all chit-chatting away here. And so, Toby, what do you think with this wet sessions that we've had, the topsy-turvy thing? Give us some thoughts.
I'm actually quite surprised that the 250s were allowed to go out because, you know, they're only like 100 kilos and the MotoGP bikes are another 50% heavier, so they can cut through the water, but, you know, race control, they're not gonna cancel a session that they let start. But it wasn't much fun out there, but nah, let's just hope it's not raining so much tomorrow. It stopped now. It stopped. Stopped at the end of 250. Did you hear what they were playing on the tannoy?
No.
Here comes the sun. Da, 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 da. They were playing that, which I thought was quite amusing, just as we sort of finished the broadcast at, what, 4:15 or so. But
did the GP session get cut?
No. Everybody went straight through.
Okay.
Went straight through. The big boys, they pulled themselves in with about 5 minutes to go because it was just hooning down so much.
Yeah. It did end early a bit.
They ended themselves. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but nobody ended it for them, so, you know, they weren't going to go quicker, but... yeah, I mean, you know, Westy quick this morning, Westy quickest this afternoon, so...
By about 3/4 of a second.
Or whatever, yeah. I can't remember specifically, you know, Pedrosa bottom of the pile, but as Valentino said, you know, he's in at the deep end, and that magic quote, you know, from Valentino, you, just by putting the stickers on the bike, it doesn't necessarily make you go faster, does it? But he started 2 months ahead of everybody else for winter testing for 2009. He's sacrificing all of September and all of October so that by the time he gets to Valencia on the Monday, the beginning of the winter series, the winter testing, then he's maybe got a bit more ahead. But who knows what Honda got up their sleeve for next year or whatever.
Right. Now we heard on the PA system or the tannoy that Elias signed with Gresini, but there seems to be some sort of a bit of misunderstanding in other places I've talked to. Have you heard about that?
No confirmation officially, but he's obviously gone very well in the last three races. The only person to score more points than Elias in the last three races is Valentino, who's won them. Tony's a conundrum because he only goes quick really when he needs to, which is the bottom line. But when he does go quick, he goes quick well. So he'd do well to go to Gresini. He's got money behind him. There's a bit of Spanish money. He's got the right passport, all that kind of stuff. There's no point in staying on what he's got because it's, you know, it's still a bit of a mishmash team in the greatest of respect to Elice and what was the Dantine squad. It's still a bit of a mishmash, and nobody's done 2 years at Elice Ducati or Pramac Ducati, and that's probably indicative over the years that they have been going, you know. Zaus, Hodgson, da-di-da-di-da, you know, I can't remember all the riders, but no one's done 2 years there. So that's pretty indicative. I think they've gone, had enough, move on. So, you know.
Right, and not to start too much gossip, but I've heard on another podcast that that the fact that Dantin is no longer in the mix is possibly partially responsible for Elias's results in the last couple of races.
Maybe, maybe not. I spoke to Sylvan about this, but he says that he didn't really come into contact much with Dantin anyway. He always got paid, which is, you know, we know some other people didn't get paid, and now they are getting paid in that team, which is only morally correct. I actually think it's disgraceful that anybody in this world who does a job and then doesn't get paid. It's called theft in my book. If a company goes bust, that's another matter, but, you know, if people don't get paid because they've done their job good and proper, then they deserve to get paid if the boss or the organisation who should be paying them is going out and buying brand new IWCs, you know? So, if it's going to continue next year, then it'll be a bit more with Ducati's Bologna Italian input.
Right.
And hopefully that'll be That'll be good. Will it be Canepa and will it be Callio? I don't know. Look at that girl over there. Oh, dear, oh dear.
We actually spoke with her a little...
You can't see this on the podcast, can you?
We actually got to speak with her a little while ago.
Oh, that's all right then. Yeah. You can send me the, you can send them to me later then, Jules. Yeah. That's right, he really carries his camera. That's put you off your stride, isn't it? We were talking today in the broadcast about this Miss America, Kirsten Haglund, from Michigan. And Julian said, oh, yeah, I know what the girls from Michigan are like. They're like the Swedes. They're all tall and blonde and everything and whatever. And I said, this is during 250 when not a lot was going on. And I said, you know, okay, those of you in the UK, go and Google her. So a few people did, and they wrote back. And then one bloke said, I've just been caught Googling Kirsten Haglund by my wife. Thanks. Made us laugh, you know.
That is pretty funny.
I've since gone and Googled her, or everyone else in the press office has gone and Googled her. And if she's here on Sunday, then don't need to Google her anymore, eh?
Well, all right, Toby, we really do appreciate your time and everything. Hopefully we'll get a chance to speak tomorrow after Saturday.
Yep, after qualifying, see who's on pole, see if the weather's drier. And...
Yeah. Right, we're hoping for Hurricane Ike or whatever is causing this weather to move on through.
Exactly. Part two then.
Right. Bye-bye.
So this is Jim Race of Ride On to MotoGPOD.com. The first lap of qualifying for the GP bikes has started, and when they come by, it's loud, and I'm all the way behind the Pagoda, way behind pit lane, but listen to that. That's the front straight, and that's the boys bringing it down fast. There go a couple of ducks, you can tell by the sound. Anyway, this is going to rock. I'm thinking times, fast times for this, and it's totally dry, just so you know. FP3 was pretty dry, too. We might see high 30s, is my guess. Back in the July test, Spies and Canepa were running 43s, and those were on the test bikes alone. So Elias ran top of the charts for FP1, and we'll see how it goes. It's going to be a great day, and let's rock and roll this thing out of the planet. Talk to you guys soon. Bye. All right, this is Jim Race here for MotoGPOD, and I'm here with Eugene Laverty. It's Saturday afternoon after QP2, and kind of more a somber moment because Eugene had a bit of an off. Anything you can tell us about it?
Well, I'd only just done one lap, and coming towards the end of the lap, the rear let go on the same right corner where Thomas Luthi lost it this morning. It was just a identical to his, and it was a pretty big one, and I've damaged both my feet, broken the fifth metatarsal on my left foot and broken my big toe on my right foot, so it's just awkward. I won't be able to ride tomorrow, but it's not really what I needed, just too many big crashes as of late, and Misano and a few big high sides, so really my idea was just to stay on the bike this weekend. It had been going well up until then, and before you know it, you're off.
So, I guess the big question is, obviously you're one that can deal with injury. You're pretty good at like working through the pain, and you've got your World Super Sport ride at Vallelunga next weekend, right? And do you think, what did Doc Costa say about that?
Oh, that's what's most important to me right now, and that's why I was just looking to get a good weekend and focus on next weekend in Vallelunga and challenge for the podium there. But we don't know. He's got it strapped up in a way and have a soft cast that hopefully it'll help pull it straight, and come Thursday we'll take it off and see how it looks then and make we'll have a better idea. But I think Dr. Costa's motto is if you want a race, he'll get you on the bike. Yeah. So
he's a miracle worker.
Yeah, he is a miracle worker, and I think we'll have a few injections in it, and I should be able to ride. It's not going to be easy because it's on the gear shift side as well.
Yeah.
So that's just made it a bit more awkward, but I'll have a better idea on Thursday, but it's an important race for me, so I want to race.
Sure. And the hands, are the hands fine?
My hands are fine.
Yeah.
It is a bit battered up everywhere else.
Okay. Did you, your helmet took a pretty good knock. Head's fine? Didn't lose any?
No, it was fine. I didn't feel that I hit my head too hard compared to Misano. I was just banged myself up, just my lower back and stuff, but nothing else is broken. just a bit awkward that I've done injuries in both feet, so I'm walking along and about.
I guess the question is, whose ass can you kick now since you can't? You got no feet to do it.
No.
We were, all pulling for you, and I know you're kind of hurting right now. But the nice thing is that Doc Costa is here in the States, and he'll be at Vallelunga too.
Yeah.
So he can look after you there as well. And truly, he is a miracle worker when it comes to patching rider back together. And I know you want that ride really bad.
Yeah.
So, let's just take the opportunity to try and see get back together. I want to see you ride, and I know everybody does. So do what you can, all right?
Thanks, Jim.
Cheers.
Good morning, MotoGP OD. This is Jules. It's 7:45. We're here with Liam. What is a morning like at these tracks?
Sunday morning, I'm usually trying to get a lot of stuff packaged up to give back to Ducati, to send back before the warm-up. And then after the warm-up, if we have to make any changes to the bike, pieces change and go in and out, and I get that stuff ready. So hopefully by 11 or 11:30, I've got all that prepared, all the documentation prepared, and files. And then I can email that stuff away, hand it over to the factory team, because they'll take the boxes and ship it back to Italy for me. And then I begin to slowly break down my area, so that way after the race we're able to break down the garage within 3 hours, 3.5 hours. It's time to pack up and get out. Might be a little different at this track because they need to deliver all our flight cases after the race. Usually they deliver them on pit lane or behind in the paddock lane, and we've got to bring those boxes in and start loading them up, and,
right,
and then take a shower, have dinner, find a Red Bull party, and
cool. So all the materials are going to be leaving at like 5?
No, I think the material will be finished by 7:30.
Okay. And
depends on when they deliver the flight cases and how fast we want to get out of here. If we have a good result, then we add another hour just because everyone gets on the phone and talks to family or have celebrations or things like this.
And here's our buddy Jay. Say hi, Jay.
Howdy, everyone.
How's it going? So the weather forecast is iffy.
I think we're all right.
Thunder showers. We might have a white flag race.
So what? Same for everybody. I don't like white flag races at all. But, if we've seen before, a white flag race can give people a lot of chances, a lot of luck.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly this Friday was... some people were very happy.
Friday was nasty.
Oh, it was crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Morning, Jay.
Morning.
Missed you last night. It was great. We went into downtown.
Did you go to the mile?
Yeah. The mile was great, and Red Bull took care of us, and then we ended up doing another event with Red Bull in downtown. Saw all the Midwest bikers and some of the East Coast scene and tank tops and RF900 Suzukis, and I think Vanilla Ice was riding, but I wasn't sure because every other person looked like Vanilla Ice, either with a baseball hat on or... I don't think I've ever witnessed so many gloveless, helmetless people.
I know, it's crazy.
Can't ride motorcycles. They're trying to do warp down the straight of whatever little street they had with stretched swing arms, big wheel. It was really, really funky. Lots of neon on all the bikes. All show and no go. Which is why we went to the mile, which is where you see nasty bikes that go really fast. The mile was great. So nice to be able to hear all the different variations of the Harley, because you could hear different levels of tune as they came through and how they punched through the corner, and that was cool. And then I ran into this guy. He comes up to me. He's like, "I've only ever seen one other belt buckle like that before in my life." And then he shows me his belt buckle. And I'm like, "Yeah, I got the same one." It was my snap-on wrench belt buckle. And then I looked at him closely and I said, "I went to MMI with you in 1998. And he goes, "It was your belt buckle."
No way.
So he's working on Ducatis now. And then he goes, "Yeah, I remember you always used to wrap it in a rag because the teachers would complain you might scratch a bike." That was the big deal. had to worry about scratching bikes. And then later on in the night, I realized we'd worked together at Titan Motorcycles building customs. I just, you know, it seems a decade ago or more. But that was fun. What else did I run into? We ran into a lot of cool people that I'd known or met through in the last 3 years here. And it was great. Yesterday we toured Buddy Rice, two-time Indy winner. Through the box and explained a lot of things, and he was incredibly intelligent and precise. And, you know, I mentioned the word beryllium, and he said, "Oh yeah, that's a fiber." Blah blah blah. I'm just really, really on the ball. I don't think I've ever met a rider that's quite like him.
Cool.
Yeah. So that was a really fun treat, and then his entourage took care of us last night, and it was a really good time. Really nice time, but we ended the night really early because this morning we were up at 5:30 and time to rock and roll.
Okay, we'll check in with you.
I'll see you later on today.
Afternoon. Sweet. All right.
All right, it's Sunday morning. Get a chance to talk with Toby again, second time. So, how are you doing today, Toby?
Yes, all right. Sun's shining, so that's the main thing. It's a little bit breezy. I hope it doesn't bring this weather in.
Yeah, we did have a beautiful day yesterday. It was worked out perfect. It was a bit iffy looking in the morning, but yeah, for today, what are the weather guessers what are you hearing?
I haven't even got to the press office yet, so I haven't seen the latest, but it's if it's going to be torrential rain, then maybe they'll bring it forward and I don't know, sacrifice some of the support races and such like, but obviously the main race is king, and the main race is going to keep the world spinning, as it were, in this part of the world at least. So I'm pretty optimistic that I think it should be all right. But did you see the weather in Chicago yesterday? It was underwater, a separate weather front. They were underwater, and we were obviously okay yesterday. So, but it's a question of us if it comes up from below.
Yeah.
Today,
Wonderground, it's 3:40 a.m. said. Said
he's still got the price of his T-shirt on the front. Yeah, I'll put it on your forehead. Yeah, I know.
It's printed.
It's printed overnight.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Very clever. Yeah. Pretty cool. Fair play. Fair play.
They have a shirt here at the that they print up on Saturday night once they know the grid. So they've got all the color portions done in, and then they just stick in the actual grid on the back. So that's a good souvenir. And again, this is, I think, one of the ways that Indy is a bit different than Laguna Seca. Not knocking Laguna Seca. It's just these people have had more practice.
Yeah. So anyway, Wonderground said 100% chance of precipitation, thunderstorms, the whole spiel. So we'll see. I mean, you know, we had that kind of warning red sunrise. I don't know if you saw it.
Oh, was that a warning?
Well, yeah, you know, red skies in the morning, sailors take warning and all that sort of thing. I don't know how much, so we'll wife's tale, warning, I don't know.
Red sky at night, shepherd's delight.
Right. But in any case, moving on from the weather, what did revelations from yesterday's qualifying? What do you think?
Nicky did a super job yesterday. Valentino did a super job, obviously only his second pole position of the season. Maybe it was Valentino thinking, you know, I want to get ahead in turn one, turn two, turn three, that tight complex that starts the lap. You know, he said that's going to be a potential problem, trying to get around there at 30 miles an hour. It's only 55 kilometres an hour around the turn four, the tight left-hander. So there's probably a concerted effort for him to get ahead right from the word go, as he said to us yesterday. Even if I'm only 2 meters ahead than the rest, then it's a start.
Right. Yeah, exactly. What do you think? I'm not sure if we spoke about this the other day or not, but on that, the tightness of that little complex of turns and everything, what do you think it lends to the track at all? Good, bad?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
It's all decreasing.
It's just. You know, yes, they can't go around turn one flat out and go into the wall, obviously, and even if they had eight layers of safety fence and air fence, they can't do that. But do they really need to make it that tight? I mean, talk about overkill. It's this mamby-pamby, oh, I can't hurt yourself, you know, so there's an element of just unravel it a bit. They did the same at Silverstone to end the lap there. Remember the World Superbikes used to go there and it used to be such a tight, silly end to the lap at Woodcote. I've actually ridden that, and it's just, you actually have to pull the clutch in and slip the clutch. It's so slow. I mean, obviously I'm only an amateur, but it's just so slow. You know, we walk the track on Thursday, and you think, why don't they just sort of give it a bit of a kink? Not a quick kink, but just a bit of a slowing kind of kink. But hey, well.
Right, right.
You probably actually get it done with the qualifying. You know, I mean, Nicky did really well, but he was smoking the hell out of the tire in a couple corners, so he can't do that during the race and expect it to last. So I don't know what his pace is going to be like. He didn't seem quite as comfortable as the Bridgestone guys. And both Danny and him looked uncomfortable on the track.
No, Nicky was on form yesterday. That's about as good as that thing will go. You know, he's out to beat Nicky. He's out to beat Danny. He's out to prove that, you know, he's not a spent force. He's out to prove that he's still quick to the American fans and his friends and family who are only 3 hours drive down the road. You know, he's out. He's
what
out for blood.
What is on the back of his letters? It says like I put on for my clan. I think.
You've reminded me. I meant to go and dig that out yesterday, and I haven't. So I still don't know, but I'll find it out for the broadcast.
I couldn't quite figure it out because it's a very strange, like, font, and I have a close-up photo of it that I still couldn't quite read it. But definitely, my clan, you know, obviously the Hayden clan, and it's either I put out for or put on.
Oh, okay.
Well. Okay, we're not going to go there. That's where we weren't going to go. But actually, I was noticing in, I believe it was pre-practice, I thought that Hayden looked much more comfortable than Pedrosa when we were watching them go through, what was it, turn six,
did,
I believe?
Did,
yeah,
he
yeah.
He did, yeah, yeah. But, yeah.
But overall, I there was some impressive stuff. It was kind of interesting that who went out on a Q tire but still couldn't go faster when we were yesterday's qualifying?
That was, I believe... It's Dupugne.
Dupugne. Dupugne, yeah, right.
Dupugne came out in the qualifier and couldn't get Stoner's and Elias's race time beat until his second qualifier.
Right, right. Because Dupugne normally puts in an early qualifier, but he's struggling on top speed as well. He's only got a basic engine, remember. You know, he's still got a customer bike, so he'll crash.
Oh, God.
Right, wow, there's the commentator's jinx.
Right now,
So, it's hardly long odds, are they, with De Pugno?
Yeah. I would like to see all the riders finish, really.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
At every race, this place.
It's nice. It's good commentary box. It's obviously the other side of the racetrack, on the outside of the track, nearly opposite the great big pagoda here. And it's nice feeling. It's a nice sense of being in there. It's good. It's
you're,
good.
You're
it's
on
good
the outside of the track?
Yep. Yep. Okay. Yep. There's a strip of glass underneath the top tier of grandstands on the outside. We're actually only yards away from the bricks itself, from the start finish line.
Oh, wow.
So it's nice sense of being, and you can see a little bit. You can't see a massive amount. It's not a very high commentary box, but you can see a bit. So. We should look forward to this afternoon.
Right, right. Yeah. Good stuff. We are definitely looking forward to it.
What are your picks?
Stoner's not, in my view, is not quite on form. He had a bang on the head, but this wrist injury is not good. This, you know, it's his left scaphoid. It's a left-handed racetrack. People forget that. So you've got to push on the left and all this kind of stuff. And you know, is it not coincidence that he's had 7 pole positions on the bounce and then he doesn't?
Good point.
So, you know, he fell on his head, but really his chin, on Friday in the wet conditions, and that wrist is not good, I've heard, and the staple that's in there holding the scaphoid together is pulling out, and it's a mess.
Wow, so yeah, it's got to be causing him a lot of pain, and like you said, on a left-handed track, yeah, that is definitely a factor. So perhaps his qualifying effort was even all that much more superhuman then?
Maybe, and you know what he's like in qualifying. He likes to pulverize everybody and just go fast, and yet he was beaten by Valentino, so
but not by much of a margin.
Not by much of a margin, but you know, the Ducati, you know, quick and straight line and all this kind of stuff, so I don't think he's 100%, but as he said to us yesterday, I forget the precise quote, but I've got it here, just the whole weekend's not gone to plan, you know. The whole weekend has not gone to plan. And they're short on setup time. Everybody's short on setup time, but they're all in the same boat, but he's short on setup time, so we should see.
One more question I had for you is, what do you know, how's Luthi doing?
Oh, he's okay. He got knocked out. He had obviously a pretty big bang on the head.
Yeah.
And he's okay. He won't be racing today. I've got a message here from a friend of his to give you the precise stuff. Slowly getting his memory back. No broken bones. Oh yeah, he's hurt his hand. I think he got his hand stuck under himself as he was right. As he was going down the road. So that's the major problem, is that he's going to need a skin graft on his thumb and such like, because he was just a dead weight on his hand.
Right.
And also a problem for Eugene Laverty, because he's broken his fifth metatarsal in the same foot that he injured in Misano, the Irish 250 guy. So, yeah, a couple of wangs there.
We were in his box yesterday looking at his leathers. He's got
a bit of an injury plague season all around this year.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's the high-profile guys who've had the injuries, you know, like Nicky, like Lorenzo, so like Danny, but
Hopper. And Hopper was like,
and Hopper, yes, thank you. And it and Loris, you know, it goes on, but it fits and starts. You know, we've had rain at nearly every race except two. We've had rain at every race except two this year, so we've had rain at 12 races out of 14 so far this year. And then we can go for like 3 or 4 years and not have any rain at all. It swings and roundabouts.
Right. Yeah, global warming, all that good stuff.
Listen, I've got to go and do my notes, so I'm going to beetle off and get on my notes, and then I can not chill, but relax for an hour before we go out to the broadcast, and then get up. Especially if it might be early, we have to be careful. Right. If it's brought forward, I need to build in a bit of a buffer, so I'm going to shoot.
Oh yeah, certainly. Thanks very much for your time, Toby.
This is Jim Race from MotoGPOD and RideOn2.com, and it is right now, actually, the 250 race is supposed to have started already from here at Indianapolis, the inaugural running. But if you hear a sound in the background, what you're hearing is the sound of Malaysian Misano-type rains. That on top of super high winds, not necessarily a remnant of the hurricanes that have been coming through the United States, but certainly in the 2 to 3 inch per hour range. It's pretty nuts. I've taken a bunch of pictures. I'll post those up at rideon2.com. I'm sure you'll see them. You can hear the helicopter in the background. They just basically pulled the 250 grid off, and they have delayed the start. We're basically in a rain hold right now. This doesn't bode well, frankly, for... And why? You know, why, you would ask? Well, the problem is that there's a couple of places on track where water actually pools. The key ones are 5, 9, and there's a big puddle that forms in the apex of 1. Now, granted, that turn is about 60 feet wide, so there are other lines available, but still, you're going to end up with a situation where the riders aren't happy. Why does that matter? Well, the 250 guys will probably run regardless, and maybe this will taper off, although the forecast doesn't look good. But there was a comment that somebody told me about. I haven't heard it myself, that Rossi said if the rain was as bad as it was on Friday, there's a possibility that he or someone or a group of people may not run. And that would be horrible, frankly. And the rain right now is as bad as it was Friday. But it's currently only 1:20 in the afternoon here. They're about, 15 minutes late getting started with the 250s. The GP is not until 3. And so we'll see what we end up with. But for right now, it's a bit of a mess. Again, this is Jim Race from MotoGPOD and RideOn2.com. And we will talk to you and keep you updated. Ciao.
So, all right, it's Sunday and about 1:30 in the afternoon or so, and the 250 race is delayed because of frickin' Hurricane Ike or whatever, which apparently just rolled in here. So, Jules, we were talking, when's the last time? I don't know. I don't recall a rain.
I mean, the delays, yes, but they're talking cancellation because there's puddles building up on the track. It's a deluge, basically. And there's... there's also some puddles. We're staying by turn 9, which is right onto the street. It's a very fast corner. And when the safety car went by, it was like, you know, a rally car going, you know, except no mud. So, absolutely no way. We saw it actually even before they announced it. We saw the car go by. We saw it hit a huge puddle. Giant fantail of water came out, and we were like, oh, they're canceling this shit.
Right, right at that point. I mean, it was. There's inches of water on
the
track.
We're not canceling, but at least delaying.
A long delay. And unfortunately, here, we were talking to one of the track workers as well. And, you know, I think he might be thinking from the IndyCar type of thing where they truly dry the track with big fans and things. And, and he says, you know, it takes like 3 hours typically to dry the track. I'm hoping, I mean, if the rain stopped right now, I don't think we'd see any on-track action for probably the better part of an hour.
Yeah.
There's a lot of water. And we saw on Friday that there's a lot of drainage problems going on, in particularly the turn one, turn two, here at turn nine. It's another place.
But it wasn't this bad because it just came down really fast. So usually when you have rain going over a little time, the ground gets wet. You know, I don't know, the drainage system may be overflowing. Maybe can't handle the volume of water that's coming down at the same moment, you know?
That's true. And also the ground is probably still mostly saturated from Friday. So
yes,
it's not like
right.
It's going to suck up a lot more water right now.
And the day, I mean, for those who haven't been really following the day started... with the sunrise was a little bit scary because it had what did you
red where you say red sky in the morning, sailors take warning, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was very pretty, and then it started to clear up. We were hanging out during warm up by turn 7-6, that area. Just kept looking up at the sky. One half of the sky was looking really good, the other half was looking darker and darker, but it seemed like it was just that we were in the right spot. The wind was blowing all that cover away from the track. We actually watched the 125 race just about 30, 40 minutes ago, and...
started off bone dry. I mean,
yep.
the Red Bull Rookies Cup, it rained a little bit, but then that stopped, and it dried, and we were thinking we might be okay.
All day we had, like, sprinkles on and on.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a big deal. The 125 race was stopped after lap 16. They took the results at that point because two-thirds distance, I believe, was covered. And we just started walking over turn nine, and it just all of a sudden opened up.
And it's a huge... it's just pouring buckets down. It really is. Big, fat drops and lots of them. And we're actually right now, courtesy of Jules' camera with a giant lens, we're in a sort of a... not normally fan accessible zone, but it's not either all that interesting. It's basically a parking lot, and we're standing under a ledge here trying to get out of the rain.
We've got a big ass Ducati umbrella, which is apparently not made with a trellis frame because it just wants to bend every single way possible.
Oh yes, did we mention that it's also very windy? It's not just raining. There's 30 to 60 mile an hour gusts. So.
Yeah, that's going to be very bad for these 250s, and even the GP bikes. I mean, you know. In this straightaway, it's like a wind tunnel, so...
Right. So this is kind of insane conditions, and disappointing after yesterday was such a nice day. So it remains to be seen, and we're going to hang out here, and, you know, we're hoping to see a race.
Sunday evening, we ran into 250cc rider Marco Simoncelli and Jim Race. Talked to him a little bit, so here's that.
So today, you obviously got rained out, and you couldn't run the race, right?
Yes, all right.
And when you were on the grid, and you were watching the rain come down, what did you think?
Shit.
That's fine. We can say that. When you were in the track on Friday, and the rain was as bad as it was today...
Yes, Friday, the weather is... little bit better. The rain was less, and the track was okay. Not the best, but was okay. Today is not possible race.
Yeah. Okay. And so, what do you think? You hold the championship lead now.
I lead. I have. Also, 26 point advantage.
Yeah,
and one race less. So
right.
I think not so bad for the championship.
If you could have run in the same conditions that the MotoGP guys ran today, would you have wanted to run it at the start when it was still light?
Yes, I prefer the ride if it's possible.
Can I get a picture with you?
Yes.
Thank you. Good enough.
Cheers.
Like I said, a mammoth show today. I'm still doing a little bit of a kind of a brain dump to collect together all of the stuff that I recorded at Indianapolis, and that Jules, of course, is doing his photography stuff that he had, and he took 5,000 photographs there at Indy, so he's kind of wading through all of that and finding the good ones and everything. He's got some great ones, so make sure you check out that link, which right now, as I record this show and everything, it's going to be on the Ride On 2 forums. I'll put a link up to that, and hopefully by next week, Jules will have his gallery set up at popmonkey.com, and we can see his galleries of all the photos that he got at Indy, and we had a great time. Really, really did. So thanks very much to everybody that came out to the meet and greet. Thanks very much to everybody that sort of stopped and said hello. I really appreciate it. Of course, always thanks to the guys like Toby Moody, Steve Parrish, Steve Bonzi. Talked to him quite a bit, which we didn't mention earlier on. We're hopefully going to have him on the show soon. Just all kinds of people that I talked to and just super, super nice folks out there. And it's From a fanboy perspective, like I have, it's really, really cool to go to one of these events, and I'm definitely looking forward to next year at Laguna, and possibly at Indy, possibly at another venue. We'll just sort of have to see how the whole finances thing and all of that kind of goes, but we'll let you know on that one, won't we? And now we're going to close the show, and this is from Budman at the Barf Forum. I know a lot of you guys participate in the Bay Area Writers Forum. Liam, this is where he pretty much got his start of his blog, was on Barf. It's kind of split off now to motoliam.com, but in any event, Budman from Barf made this little rap for us about the Indianapolis MotoGP, and we're going to close with that.
What's up with the MotoGP? It was really windy. Nikki took second place, you see, and you know that's okay by me. Valentino took first place. He put it in the American face. But I don't care because Nikki can't compare. Valentino's the doctor. Nikki knows everything.
Arr, me hearty. MotoGP OD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I am solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL. The MotoGP OD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL, and they would make me walk the plank if I were to ever say so. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and much like buried treasure, they are to be valued and not shared. MotoGP is not affiliated with any of them.